Welcome to the Downhill Slide. It's Angela Walsh, and this podcast is all about perspectives on life from those who have passed that midway point, which is, I guess, you know, can we say 50? I don't know. It changes every decade. I feel like how long we've got to live is changing. But anyway, today I have dragged to the interview Garrett. Hello, Garrett.
Hi, how are you, Ange?
Yeah, no,
Angela,
pretty...
sorry, I should be more formal.
No, that's okay. You call me whatever you like, Garrett. It's as they say, except late for dinner. I was a bit late calling you actually because I had to let the horse out. The horse gets cranky. I have a miniature Shetland pony, and when I come home, he hears me come home. And if I don't go and give him a treat, like a carrot,
give him a carrot, okay,
or let him go on the grass, then he gets a bit cranky.
Yeah.
And I'm much the same, to be honest. If I don't get my afternoon chocolate.
Afternoon delight.
There's trouble.
Yeah. I can see that, and I agree with that totally. I'm on the pony side. So.
You've seen me being hangry, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, I have.
I'm pretty sure. So we were having a bit of a chat before about the phone system, like us connecting, because at this point in time, I don't even know where you are. Where are you? In Queensland?
I'm in Queensland, yes. I'm in my apartment at West End, overlooking the river, which is a lifestyle that suits me very fine. Thank you very much. In fact, I moved in here a couple of years ago and realised very quickly. I already knew that there was a sailing club just up the river that would race through the summers on Saturday afternoons. But after a year or two of watching them having all the fun out on the river, around about this time last year, I up and joined the club to go back to my roots, which were sailing around the Gold Coast Broadwater, quite some years ago. You're talking about the Downhill Slide, your pivot point being 50. Let's just say if I'm calling myself midlife now, I've got a life expectancy that's over 140. Let's leave it at that.
Rock on.
You won't want to know me at that age, I can tell you.
I thought you were just a flying man because you're a glider pilot.
I am indeed, and as you well know, because we have been, you and I, together to Burketown for the Morning Glory.
Yeah.
Better just clarify there. Yeah, okay.
Garrett.
Yes, earlier I said afternoon delight, morning glory. dear listeners, please be aware that Angela and I have a purely professional relationship, which one of the highlights of which was a documentary that we made together, I guess is the way to say it, called Tsunami in the Sky. And that was about a phenomenon called the morning glory, which is a cloud, a roll cloud that occurs in the Gulf of Carpentaria at the onset of the monsoon, late September, early October, usually with about the same predictability and regularity as cyclones in that part of the world. The thing about the morning glory is, and it's probably too difficult to go into the full explanation of it, except to say that it looks to someone on the ground or in the air like a long, giant Swiss roll of cotton wool-like cloud that can go from one side of the horizon to the other. And it's tracking towards you at quite a rate of speed and rolling. And as it rolls, it's sucking air up. And that air that gets sucked up is generating what's called lift to glider pilots. So if you can get yourself on the leading edge of this cloud, which is, it's a wave, a cloud wave is the correct description, you're like a surfer on a tube, on the longest tubing ride you can imagine. Literally, it can go for hundreds of kilometres. That's what Tsunami in the Sky is all about. I'm sure Angela may even be able to put you onto a copy if you want to see it.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. and in fact, that's why I became a glider pilot. if you want to know that, that goes, I first flew a glider well over 50 years ago when I was in my late teens. What happened at that time was the gliding field was a long way away. I was a young man, footloose and fancy free, and the weekends seemed to be slightly wasted going out to a dusty paddock with a bunch of older guys when there were lots of younger girls back here in the Big Smoke or down at the coast where I was surfing at the time. And so I didn't pursue gliding at that point, but it stayed in the back of my mind very strongly for years and years and years until about 15 years ago, I heard a radio interview with a guy, an Englishman, who founded a thing called the Cloud Spotted Society, which is still going. And he was being interviewed all about all sorts of different clouds in the world. And he mentioned the Morning Glory, which I had never heard of until that moment. And it's unique in Queensland. Queensland, Gulf of Carpentaria, is now known to be the only place in the world where this happens as a regular, predictable phenomenon. And I'd never heard of it. That afternoon, I jumped online. By the end of the day, I had joined a gliding club and signed up for a month-long course in learning to fly a glider. And only about 18 months after that, I found myself in a motor glider, two motor gliders and another powered aircraft, six of us, Intrepid pilots, heading, flying from Caboolture down near Brisbane all the way up to Burketown to fly on the Morning Glory. And that's how I became a glider pilot. I was very green at that time. Got a little more experience under my belt now. And that's when Angela came in on that film, Tsunami in the Sky.
And it was such a marvellous experience, Garrett. And we worked on that together. And you always end up in the credits having certain lines in the credits, but we worked on that together and we made that happen together, which was just tremendous.
That was a corporate effort. Yes, a team.
We only had a tiny budget.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody else came along and their recce was our full budget. And
that's right.
They had some outstanding footage. What can you do? Yeah.
I'm pleased with what we got, considering with how we got it, and I think it still stands up. I now fly as an instructor, telling other people how to fly. And I've only made two trips to Burketown for the Morning Glory, and I'm beginning to think I'm a bit overdue for one. Maybe one day.
How are you going to fit that in with your sailing now?
Well, that's interesting. As I said, sailing was what I grew up with. I kind of think of myself as a triple S, a sailor, surfer, soarer, although surfing is fading into the background, but sailing and soaring, which is what we glider pilots call our kind of flying, is still very much in the foreground. So I joined the sailing club to sail and found myself, ironically, spending much more time in a powerboat because one of the problems that sailing clubs have is they don't have very many people who are qualified to run powerboats. And the more sailing lessons and courses and things they do, the more they need people to run the backup, the boats that are there for safety and carrying instructors and that sort of thing. My license goes back to the mid-60s. I guess you could say I've been enjoying myself in fluid environments for most of my life.
Gosh.
One way or another.
But you've been a dreadfully hard worker, Garrett. You've worked mainly in advertising, television, for how long now?
Yes, actually, this week. Let me say the 14th of February. In fact, it was a date that people above a certain age may well remember, that I started work 14th of February 1966. Yes, you older people, my career is as old as the Australian dollar. And I don't think it'll last longer than decimal currency. I think that might just outlast me. In fact, it has. I call myself retired now. But I, I always wanted to be a writer. I knew that I was going to be a writer when I was 15. You know, short stories in the school magazines, that sort of thing. And by the time I was about 16 or 17, I was going to be a war correspondent. I was going to follow in the footsteps of my heroes like Ernest Hemingway, and get out there and get into the thick of things and report back to the world with scintillating writing, of course. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to do until I wrote the great Australian novel. There were my dreams. But what happened, a chance conversation that I overheard in a setting vocational guidance back in those days, which was pretty rudimentary. I heard someone say journalism was a very restricted calling, very, very, very few opportunities to get a cadetship, and there were more opportunities in advertising. So I made an instant decision in my last year at school that I'd switch from being a war correspondent to making TV commercials. Well, I didn't know I was making TV commercials at that time. I just wanted to write, and so I could write ad copy. Fine, I'd do that. And I, on that fateful day, 14th of February, 66, I got a job effectively as an office boy in the advertising department of Meijer, which I don't think they have an advertising department anymore. A lot of things have changed in retail since then. But my first job was to literally deliver newspapers to all the buyers in the different departments down in the store, where they kept copies of all their ads and kept details on how much product they had and how much they'd sold off each ad. And so when I, in a fairly short time, because it was a school of hard knocks, but it was quick. I started in 66 as a junior office boy and left Meijer in mid-67 as a senior writer. So, yeah, that's not saying that I had a meteoric rise. That's what everyone did. That's how it worked. You worked your way up. And if you worked hard or maybe shone in other ways, you got there. So I then went into advertising agencies where I was for quite a number of years, mainly in Brisbane, but also in London and down the track a little later in Hong Kong, where I worked as a writer, copywriter, creative group head, producer. That's when I discovered television, and creative director. Creative director is a wonderfully wanky title that we used to enjoy in those days. That kept me going from the 60s through until the 90s, when the yearning for the great Australian novel was still sitting there in the back of the head somewhere, but I never did do that. That had morphed through all my experience of working with film crews and some great cinematographers, that I was going to write, if not the great Australian film, at least a good film. And I did. I wrote a bunch of scripts and discovered that the world of feature films didn't care one jot about my experience in making all these 30-second films, little short TV commercials. They didn't call that experience. So I took another U-turn, if you like, and started writing scripts for TV drama. I don't know whether you may not remember it, Angela. The show I worked on most was called Pacific Drive.
I remember it.
Yeah, there were some steamy scenes in that show.
Did you write those in, Garrett?
I wrote some, yes, yes. I had the privilege of writing the turkey-based a lesbian love story impregnation scene.
Oh, great. That's that must have been interesting for you.
Well, it was all done very, very tastefully, of course. There was no, yes, we won't go into the details because it didn't in those days. That was the 90s. There was not a lot to be seen, but it was implied, let's say that. Then I thought I was retired a few years ago, but a friend of mine, an editor who I'd worked with for half a century or so, called in a quandary. He was working on a fishing show, which is a long, long, long-running show, and they needed a writer-producer very quickly. So I stepped in to help him out and ended up doing that. It was a series called Escape with E.T. for, I think I did another 8 series of that, so that's 8 years. And I think it's now, it's well over series 20, which means it's been being made, it's still on air, having been made for something close to 25 years, which is pretty remarkable in the television world of today. But eventually I decided enough was enough of that, and I can now safely call myself retired. So that's where, what are we talking about? The downhill slope. I'm enjoying that slope.
Well, that's part of it. If you can retire, we have this constant discussion, people I know that are still working, that a lot of us are not going to ever retire. We just have to keep working because we'll have to pay our bills, pay our mortgage, and because no doubt we won't have a government looking after us in our old age, that we have to set ourselves up so that we can have a carer, that we can be looked after. It's frightening, actually.
It is. I agree. And I'm very aware of that. And I know that I'm lucky. I'm extremely lucky. I actually lived through what is recognised as a golden age of advertising in the 60s. And that scene today is nothing like it. Baby boomer, of course. Possibly the last generation to go into our twilight years knowing that we are going to do better than our parents did and probably than our children and certainly grandchildren. I've got grandchildren who, they're bright, they're ambitious, and they're the ones who are out. Believe it or not, my eldest grandchild is 23 this year.
Oh, wow.
And working, you know, professional. But he already, I can see, he has nowhere near the prospects that I had at the same age. He won't have as easy a ride as I had. And there's nothing I can do about that, unfortunately. To whatever I can do materially to help those kids, but the world is a hard taskmaster, and I sometimes feel, well, I don't sometimes, I do feel guilty about that my generation, I think it'd be a hard call to say that we stuffed up the world. We probably contributed a bit, but so did previous generations. What we have enjoyed is, well, to use a current word, is probably unsustainable. Mm-hmm. So that's the challenge for future generations. I don't want to get too maudlin, but...
No, I'm already depressed. What do you any ideas, Garrett? Any ideas on what we should be doing now to turn this around?
I would say one of them would be potentially working less. There is going to be less work around, you know, because of technology and all that sort of stuff. back in 1988. In fact, one of the big advertising projects I worked on events was Expo 88 here in Brisbane, which the theme of that was leisure in the age of technology. And back then, 1988, everyone thought the computers and robots were going to take over and we were all going to be on a perpetual 365-day a year holiday. Of course, it hasn't worked out that way. And what no one thought about at that time was if you're not working, you're not getting paid. But I think there are ways, surely, that that things can be spread out a little more evenly across the world. Therein lies another problem. Here in Australia, we, all of us, are so fortunate compared to the rest of the world. I read something recently about that. If you know, there's a lot of talk about the top 1% and the rich are getting richer and all that. But I think you and I in Australia, we certainly are in, just because we live in Australia. I'm not sure about the 1%, but it's probably we're well within the top 10% of the world, just because of where we are. So.
And that relates to assets as well. That relates to a person who's got their own home and even if they're paying off the mortgage.
Exactly. Yeah. Compare that to someone in one of the South American countries or Africa, sub-Saharan Africa or Southeast Asia, where, you know, a dollar a day is something they might dream of. Yes, we're sitting pretty by comparison. So. I don't know what we do. I'm not a politician. I don't want to be, but I hope we've got some good politicians coming up in the future generations political leaders.
I've got my theories, Garrett. I think what we need to do. This is just me, top of my head. I think we need to start caring about each other.
Exactly. Yes, care.
So if we get a politician, why don't they think about the people who have a disability that they cannot go out? So who can look after that person and take them out? If they are happy to work, guide them to get a job, a person who is without work. How about we look after each other? How about we maybe make education free again? give people opportunities.
Yes. It is. We need a reset. We need to hit the reset button, a paradigm shift. What's been happening in the world? Well, throw a pandemic in on top of that, and that maybe is the reset button, if you look at it that way. Is it? You know, if the world can learn enough lessons from what it's still going through, maybe we get a shift in attitudes and culture and the way people get on with each other. Because, you know, we evolved through caring. It's the only way that we could have grown, as not the fastest animal, not the strongest, not the biggest. But we came out on top of the food chain, and that was through there's a phrase we have at my gliding club, which is it's the thing we live by: look after your mates. That's the most important thing, and look after your mates is how human society has got where it is now. We've probably forgotten that. We need to remember it a bit more.
Garrett, I don't know if you can hear my phone ringing, but that's a mutual friend of ours, Brett Johnson, who's an absolutely outstanding engineer, but sound designer, musician.
All the rest
of it is just great. And you've dealt with many such talented people in your time. And you made a film, a short film, that you a number of years ago now, that was rather outstanding. Talk about that film, Heads Up.
Heads Up. I made a few short films in one form or another. Well, I think I reveling in the title of executive producer on a few of those. But yes, Heads Up is one that that's probably one of the proudest little things I've done.
We're just going on the mates, looking after each other, and that war always comes to mind when I think of mates and the way Australians tend to be in the war. And Heads Up was really a special film.
Yeah, it was. It was a simple, very simple script that came to me via what's now called Screen Queensland, the government body. And the writer Les McDiamond had written this beautiful little story, which is set in a trench in 1918. World War One is about to end. There's not a lot happening for the Australian troops. And our hero, if you like, is an officer in charge of a group of men. And this, what do we want to call him? A bastard of an officer comes in who wants him to commit his men to an atrociously wasteful exercise just for the glory, because this guy has spent his war, shining his pants behind a desk, and he's seeing the war ending, and he wants to have an attack on his credit. And our hero outwits him in a pretty good way. That's where the Heads Up. I suppose I should tell people.
No, so we need to find it online watch it. It is online. Can we watch it?
I'm not sure whether it is online. I'll search it out. If it isn't, I will make moves to do that. Because so Heads Up. Yes, Heads Up. And a very Australian story. It's about diggers. Yeah, it's about Australian diggers and looking after their mates.
It could probably go to the extremes. We won't encourage that kind of behaviour. But looking,
not quite like that. No.
We won't. Not going to tell the story because I want you to find it. I want you to find it. Watch it. It's great.
Heads Up. Yep. Some great actors. Some great performances. Dean Ganter, who I got as director. Funnily enough, years earlier, he was a playmate of my kids. They were next door neighbours when he and my kids were probably 4 or 5 years old, and then had moved, and we came back into each other's orbits in the film industry. Funny how that works. It's a very small world here in Queensland in the film industry.
I think it's small all over the country, really, Garrett. And you know a lot of talented people, as I said, and you've actually got some music for us to listen to today. Tell me about the music.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, Gary Smith is a muso, a producer and music writer who I've worked with over the years on jingles. Making many soundtracks for TV and radio commercials. And we actually did just recently come back together. So I came out of retirement, if you like, to do
some
commercials.
Go back to work.
Yeah, well, it wasn't work. It was pro bono.
Okay.
For PTSD in service people, but in first responders, thinking of the fireys who, the bushfires this time last year. All through the pandemic, our frontline people in the medical field and so on. Anyway, so Gary and I have been working together again recently, which is great. It's like just being back in the saddle again. But he has a studio called Jam House Music, and he's been working for a couple of years with a guy who I don't know, Shane Murray, but he's got a background like me, a copywriter, art director, been through several agencies. But instead of dreaming about the great Australian novel, he wants to be a singer-songwriter. And he'd been writing songs, and he brought some to Gary a few years ago. And they've now been working together on producing track after track after track. And there is a track that we can play a section of here called Absent Friends, which is a finalist in several categories of the Australian Songwriters Association Song Contest. Off the back of that, Gary and Shane have just released an EP of children's music and an American album and a whole bunch of swing and jazz and blues tracks, which they've signed with a licensing company in Detroit.
Wow.
So they are getting out there and doing it. And I guess that's the thing about the world these days is that being in Australia used to be, certainly when I started back in the 60s, was an enormous impediment because it was all happening elsewhere. I remember when I was working at Myer, a guy who had been at Myer came back from a couple of years in London, and that was Carnaby Street. Do you remember that at all? Carnaby Street,
yeah.
The Beatles, the Rolling Stones. This guy came back into the office with, he had the right hair, he had the right clothes. I can remember my jaw dropping at the age of 17, thinking, one day if I really try hard, I may be half as cool as that guy is. But that was because he'd been on the other side of the world. Now you don't need to be. You can do it as Gary and Shane are proving from here. And in fact, I can't let. I was in advertising. I've got to do a little self promotion.
Go on.
This year in the COVID, I did finally publish a novel.
Hey.
Not the great Australian novel, but it's a book. E-book, you'll find it, at Amazon, Apple Books, any of the usual places, and it's called Prince Hunter. It's actually a book I wrote in 1982 when what it's about was happening and hot. So it's set against the background of the Falklands confrontation between Britain and Argentina, and the story is one of my hero, Paul Paolo Hawker, is half Argentine, half English. He was in the Argentine Navy. He's out because he hates the junta that's running Argentina, or the guys who are fighting with the Brits. And he's blackmailed by those same people with a demand, a simple demand, because he's the only guy, because of his experience and who he is, that they think would be able to do what they want him to do, and that is to snatch Prince Andrew, who was a helicopter pilot for real, on a British aircraft carrier in the Falklands, snatch Prince Andrew from the middle of the British fleet and hold him hostage for the end of the war. And to get Paul to do that, they are holding his family, his wife and child, hostage under the guns of an IRA hit squad. So it's got a bit of intrigue, a bit of action. There's plenty of action on the water. There's sailing in it. There's action in the air. There's flying in it. Hey, it's me. And there's plenty of action in bed as well. So it's a bit James Bondish.
Well,
Prince Hunter, look for it.
Prince Hunter, all right. So we can download that at some point, pay a reasonable fee as well, and let's support Garrett and his writing career. It's about time. Well, actually, you're covering all bases there, Garrett, so I think well done to you.
I'm enjoying life, and yes, I am still writing. So
look out for the next one then.
Look out for the next one, yeah. Yep, look out for the next one.
All right. Well, we better make sure that we say Garrett Russell.
Yes, that's it, Garrett Russell. Oh, yeah, do that, because if you just look at Prince Hunter, on the ebook sites, you're going to get sort of bronzed and buffed torsos, a bit of the bodice ripper stuff.
And that's only in a portion of your novel. All right, Garrett. Listen, thank you so much for all your sharing. We'll go out playing a bit of this song. And where can we hear your mate's music?
I'm not aware of any deals that they've signed in Australia. But if you went on any of the streaming services, Shane Murray Music, might find it there.
Thank you so much for being part of the Downhill Slide.
Always great to talk to you, Angela. Thank you.
The years have been way too long, way too long. But I can't wait, I can't wait, I can't wait till I see you all again. But until that time, with all I am and all I have for you, is this song. Don't hold back the years, don't hold back the years, don't hold back the years, live for today.